Wondering what's the buzz? Then tune into Happy Hours for your dose of All That Matters, the exclusive HR podcast by NHRDN in partnership with Timber Media, podcaster for India Inc.
Welcome to Happy Hours, exclusive NHRD podcast. I am Nikita Doshi, part of NHRD Bangalore Executive Committee and work in the learning team at Publicis Sapient. Today's podcast is about mind matters. Nearly 150 to 200 million Indians suffer from some form of mental disorder, but less than 30 million people are getting active intervention. 43% of employees in India's corporate sector suffer from depression or anxiety disorders. Almost every second employee. Mental health is an important topic in today's context and also going forward. Everyone deals with crisis and stress differently, but most people are not equipped. Hence, we have an expert with us, Dr. Shyam Bhatt. He's a psychiatrist, integrative medicine specialist, and writer. Dr. Bhatt has a rare combination of postgraduate training and American board certification in two specialties, psychiatry and internal medicine. Dr. Bhatt combines these qualifications with a deep study and understanding of Eastern philosophy and healing practices and has been called a pioneer of integrative medicine and holistic psychiatry in India. You would have heard Dr. Bhatt's meditations on the CureFit app. Personally, I am very inspired by the work that he is doing in the mental health space. Welcome to Happy Hours, Dr. Shyam Bhatt.
Thank you, Nikita. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's start with the first section, which is bottoms up, where we would want you to share some practical solutions to address mental health challenges.
Bottoms up.
In the current context, millions and billions of people around the globe are in lockdown, and sometimes we don't even think about our own state of mind, which is our mental health. And as we are continuing our efforts to keep our morale high in these unprecedented times, some days we also feel and face loneliness, stress, anxiety, burnout, and all of these emotions take a toll on us if we let them persist. Resilience and emotional well-being is the key to thrive and support us in these difficult times. Considering you are an expert and you have also helped millions of people, can you share some quick tips for someone who is dealing with anxiety or depression, or someone who is feeling overwhelmed currently?
Sure. I think it's important, firstly, to understand that it's not one size fits all, and it depends on the extent of the symptoms and what the causes might be. And just like, you know, you can't have one prescription for fever, you'll have to figure out what it is and what the reason is before you sort of determine what the best approach is. So, for example, one person might be feeling lonely because of social circumstances. Another person's feeling of loneliness might be amplified because they went through a significant loneliness and deprivation in their own childhood, and those issues are coming out during this time of lockdown. So it's not that the same experience has the same cause, and therefore, you know, I think one of the problems with mental health is people want, as you said, practical, simple solutions, and often it's a little more nuanced than that. Having said that, there are definitely many things that you can do to maintain your mental health, and these are absolutely essential practices. You may already know this, but I want to emphasize how important they are. Number one, getting enough sleep at night. I can't emphasize this enough, because I think during the lockdown, a lot of people, their schedule is not regular, and so they get they don't get enough sleep and they're sleep deprived. And we know that sleep deprivation is at the root cause of a lot of anxiety, depression, and stress. So the first thing is get at least 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night. Make sure you get going to bed at the same time and waking up at the same time every day, and make a schedule for yourself. And that leads me to the second point. Make a schedule. Make sure that you don't have to be rigid about it, but make sure that you have a plan for the day so that you don't feel increased uncertainty, because remember, uncertainty is one of the key reasons for anxiety during this time. The third thing is to exercise. There's a wealth of research that proves that physical exercise improves mental health and is a good preventive strategy against anxiety and depression. So at least, it doesn't have to be very vigorous exercise. Even 30 minutes of brisk walking every day is excellent. Also try to spend some time in nature, spend some time outdoors. Next, very important thing is to make sure that you have and are maintaining social connections. Social distancing, you know, as a few people have already pointed out, should be rephrased physical distancing, because we need to maintain our social ties. One of the common features of people who suffer from depression often is a feeling of isolation. And so make sure that you're well connected, call your friends, maybe even, with all adequate precautions, meeting one or two friends and so on is important. Next is nutrition. Nutrition plays a huge role in mood. And again, we don't really think of, all of these strategies because they're about the body. We don't necessarily think about them as being powerful strategies for the mind, but they are. So eating a healthy, nutritious diet, meaning avoiding too much sweets, reducing sugars, reducing and in fact avoiding processed food like packaged food and fast food. There's lots of fruits and vegetables. If you're a non-vegetarian, then you can eat a bit, but make sure that you're still getting plenty of fruits and vegetables, and that will make a big difference. Then finally, to practice emotional self-management. And this is, of course, a huge thing in itself, but a few key strategies here. Firstly, practicing meditation so that you can manage your mind better. Most of the problems are not really about what's happening to us. It's about how our mind is reacting to what is happening around us. And the more mastery we have over the mind, over the movements of the mind, if we are able to bring, for example, our mind to the present moment when we want to, that is a huge skill to learn because it really helps decrease stress during times of uncertainty. So practicing that and connecting then with compassion for yourself, for others, and that's very important, I think, especially for the audience listening to this. Most of them, if not all of them, high achievers, usually driven very hard to succeed. And during times of uncertainty, you can start being hard on yourself or on other people around you. And so I'd really suggest you look at that and try to let go of that and bring some compassion. So those are the top tips to maintaining a healthy body and mind during this time.
Thank you, Doctor. And the point that you shared about physical distancing and not social distancing and not emotional distancing resonates a lot with me. And I can share my own example. I have been working from home for last 3 months. And I was okay with it. I didn't realize the impact it had on me till yesterday when I actually finally met few people, and that resulted in so much of mental rejuvenation and liberation. So I do agree, and I do urge people to stay connected, because that's very, very important, because lockdown, work from home is going to stay for next couple of months.
The exclusive HR podcast by NHRDN in partnership with Timber Media, podcaster for India Inc.
Doctor, I want to highlight another element of mental health. So last year, we witnessed the suicide of Cafe Coffee Day founder, which was attributed to stress. Recently in the news, we've seen, multiple people from the film industry also succumb to stress. The challenge is someone, with mental health issues wouldn't come knocking at your door, telling you about their problem. It's not about talking, it's about the unsaid. And most people don't even know that the near and dear ones, be it at work, be it at home, be it friends, are having these anxiety issues. So how does one develop that empathy to understand and catch some of these signs? It also takes a lot of effort and emotional labor to be the pillar of support continuously through the crisis time. So how does one manage that?
Empathy comes firstly from understanding the situation. For example, if someone has a broken leg, one of your loved ones, and they're sitting in the house with pain, empathy will come naturally because you understand they're in pain, you understand they're struggling, and you won't tell them, listen, you need to get stronger, you need to get up and walk, you should ignore the pain, this pain is all imaginary. You won't say any of that. If that person says, I need to go to a doctor, you'll help them go to a doctor. If the doctor says, you need to take a medicine for this pain and for this bone, you'll encourage them to take it because you want them to get better. But when it comes to mental health, somehow we can't see that. A person has got depression, and because of clinical depression, they are sad. They feel not motivated. Maybe they are not moving out of their bed. They're not doing things. And here, a lot of family, because they don't understand that depression is an illness, that suicide is a preventable end result of an illness, like a heart attack is an illness that can be prevented. That's what suicide is. That's what depression is. But rather, because the family doesn't see that, they start telling the person, listen, get up. Why are you feeling this way? You should just look at the bright side, be positive. And unfortunately, many times they don't encourage the person to go and see a doctor, see a psychiatrist, see a mental health professional. professional. And then if they go to see a psychiatrist, sometimes, you know, medicines are required for the treatment of depression and anxiety. It depends on the case, but many times that is required. And here again, there's a lot of opposition from the family members and from people around them saying, listen, you shouldn't take a medicine. Can you imagine the plight of the person who has a broken bone and pain when the world around him or her doesn't acknowledge that there is real pain and says that they shouldn't take treatment and they should continue to walk without healing the bone? Can you imagine how bad that person will feel, how ashamed and how ununderstood and how hellish that experience would be? That's the tragedy of depression and anxiety, that not only is there the emotional anguish of the condition, but it's compounded by the fact that all around you, people don't see it because there's no broken bone you can point to. They can't see the brain scans that we know show us changes in the brain function in depression. So it's not about empathizing with someone just because they're sad. It's about understanding there's a condition that is causing severe pain, suffering, and dysfunction, and that it needs professional help, and that the family should do everything possible to help the person get that. So the way to approach family is not try to solve the problem as if it was sadness, similar to what you might have experienced when you were sad during some times of depression. Sadness is a symptom of depression, but it's not the same thing. So you can't say, look, I was sad and I went through it and I know that you just have to be strong. That works for sadness. It doesn't work for depression. So telling somebody to think positively, don't do that. Listen to them, hear them out, understand what they're going through. Understand that a lot of this, most of it, maybe all of it, is currently outside their control because the brain is not entirely under our control. In fact, it's not under our control, even at the best of times. It's just that it's functioning all right, so you don't realize that. So understand that and then support them in their journey towards recovery, understanding that this is a condition that needs treatment and understand. So empathy comes from understanding the realities of depression, and we have a long, long way to go. Even now, when you look at reporting of suicide and depression, you will read things like, it's not clear about the reasons for depression. That betrays a lack of understanding of depression. That's like saying it's not clear what the reasons are for the heart attack. It's complex. It's very multivariable. It's not a life event or a combination of life events that we can understand. And that leads to a sort of witch hunt and a going through every detail of the person's life, trying to find out every negative thing that was said to the person, every unkind word that was said to the person, and then saying that was the result of suicide. Life is cruel to all of us in many ways. Nobody is living a perfect life. Everybody goes through hardship. Everybody wants something, and many times it doesn't happen in our life. But that doesn't mean that leads directly to suicidality and depression. There are many other factors, some of which are not even understood today, but including genetic factors, biological factors, and so on. And of course, stress plays a role. Stress plays a role in a lot of diseases, from diabetes to high blood pressure to cardiovascular disease. Depression is not the only disease that is caused by worsened or caused by stress, or that stress is a significant factor, but it's not a direct cause and effect. So we need to start understanding the complexity of depression and suicide. And from when we understand that, we will become more and more empathic.
Thank you, doctor. And I think one of the things that you highlighted was listening. And I think that's really important. When you actually talk to a person who's dealing with any of these mental health challenges, and there is a chance that, you know, the person, the caregiver, may also get affected by it. And, you know, it may not be a happy conversation, but the intent is not to cut them off and to hear them out. So listening, while it seems very simple, you know, it isn't. And it's important to be there with the person through and throughout.
That's right.
The exclusive HR podcast by NHRDN in partnership with Timber Media, podcaster for India Inc.
Doctor, mental health is still a stigma, you know, in the society. It's still a taboo to talk about it or even visit a therapist. A lot of HR professionals are listening to this podcast. What can we as HR professionals do to make workplaces compassionate, more empathetic, and also to create more awareness around this so that people feel comfortable? And how can we as HR professionals be equipped or learn more about this topic to better address employee mental health challenges?
So the goal should be to normalize conversations about mental health and to normalize the fact that everybody at some point in their lives may need some support emotionally, and that there's nothing abnormal about it any more than it's abnormal to get physical health checkups or to go to the gym to maintain your body we spend a lot of time maintaining the body. We don't spend, obviously, quite enough time maintaining the mind, if at all. And as you said, there's this strange idea that somehow it is shameful to look at the mind, but not shameful to improve our bodies. So the HR professionals, everybody should, of course, firstly be really aware of the need for mental health. And that, I think, is well established. Plenty of data saying that mentally healthy workforce contributes much more to the bottom line, even if someone is looking only at the bottom line. But of course, you know, it's a much more positive, enthusiastic, motivated workforce, and that is good for everybody and for society. So that's important, to know the importance. And then the second thing is to invest monies behind it. It's not enough just to say it's important. It's vital that the company spends money in getting psychologists and psychiatrists and provides psychological support for its employees. And policies should reflect that. So leave policy should reflect the fact that it's not just physical illnesses that you can take sick leave for, but also if you have emotional crises or issues, that should be perfectly all right with the company, and there should be no stigma about it within the organization. The organization also should have regular awareness sessions, you know, talks and group discussions around mental health. We don't change behavior and attitudes overnight. It takes time and it takes concerted effort to change attitude. But once it does, then it's long lasting. I think that, as you know, it's inescapable now that we cannot turn away from the fact that stress is all around us. And as you said, you're reading newspaper reports of prominent people who it affects, but people from all walks of life. And everybody now knows somebody, if not themselves, who's going through significant stress. And after COVID, I think a lot more people are coming out openly and talking about it. And so I hope that change lasts, and that we not only, you know, we have a society where we talk about it openly. It is the strangest thing that we're not talking about it when statistics show that this is the single biggest public health crisis facing our country, because suicide is a leading cause of death for Indians between the ages 15 to 39. And yet we're still not talking about it openly, and we still don't know enough about it. So there's a huge gap between the fact that imagine, for example, if COVID was happening and we weren't talking about it, or we were ashamed to talk about it, or we didn't understand anything about it, and we didn't even know it was a virus, but we were blaming the person's will or weakness or all kinds of things. That's the level, that's the situation with mental health. When 230,000 people are dying in this country from suicide, and hundreds of thousands more from substance abuse and from secondary consequences of depression like smoking and bad lifestyle, we're talking about 500,000 people at least dying prematurely. And then I can't even imagine the numbers who are affected and suffering every year. And yet we're talking about, we're not talking enough about it, and we don't know enough about it. So organizations will play a key role in making sure, and HR will play a key role in making sure that this culture of normalization of mental health, and in fact, not just normalization, but I'm saying it should be aspiration. Everybody seeks the best body. Why doesn't everybody seek the best mind? Everybody seeks a beautiful body, but why don't we seek a beautiful mind? And that's what we should all say, that this is not even, forget about normal, forget about saying I'm not ashamed. Say I'm proud that I'm a person who maintains my mental health and tries to achieve my best potential. And part of achieving our best potential is to ensure that we have good mental health. So that's the culture we want embedded in the fabric of our society and our workplace.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thought, Doctor, that everyone aims to have a great body, but what about mind? With this, we wrap up the first section, which is bottoms up. And now we'll move on to the next section, which is the rapid fire round, where we would want you to share your responses in just about one or two lines, primarily on what will be your advice if a person is experiencing any of the mental health issues. So I'll share a person's experience, and what advice would you give to that person, and you can share that in about two or three lines.
The rapid fire round.
Okay, so doctor, what would be your advice if a person is experiencing anxiety?
Now, firstly, let me say it's a sign of the times that we want solutions in one or two lines for complex issues. But I'll do my best. Anxiety, firstly, I'll preface all of this by saying that if this doesn't work, obviously see a mental health professional. Don't struggle with it alone. Okay, that's very important. Anxiety, you should try breath work. That's a good first step to reducing anxiety. And you can try slow breathing, I would recommend something called the 4-7-8 breath, which is very useful. Breathing in to the count of 4 through the nose, holding your breath to the count of 7, and breathing out through your mouth to the count of 8. And doing that 4 or 5 times, that will reduce anxiety.
What will be your advice if the person is experiencing loneliness?
To remind themselves of the many people who love them and the amount of love that have shared over there, think through how much love they've had in their life. And then to stay in touch with others, to really make an effort, because loneliness breeds isolation, loneliness creates more loneliness. So to start making that step to stop social media and to actually reach out, make a call, get on a video call with a friend and try to meet a friend, go for a walk. And even if you don't feel like it, you'll notice that repeated contact with a few close people who you feel comfortable with improves your sense of loneliness, decreases.
Thank you, Doctor. What will be your advice if a person has a very strong negative bias, thinks only negative?
If it's associated with other mood symptoms of depression, you need to consult a mental health professional. But if it's mild, you can start with doing what we call cognitive bias modification, where you have a bias towards negative, which is what is happening. So you start retraining your brain to look at positive. And what you do is that in every situation, you ask yourself, what is the most positive thing about what is happening right now around me and within me? What can I look for that is positive? And just pay attention to that. This doesn't mean you deny the negative. It just means that you also notice the positive. The more you do that, the more those neural pathways will get strengthened and that'll help.
Okay, the last one, Doctor. What will be your advice if a person experiences guilt of not having spent time with family and not even getting time for self?
So this is usually a result of not setting a good schedule or boundaries. It's important to know what matters to you in your life and to make sure that you prioritize your time to reflect what is important in your life. Often what we do in the day doesn't reflect what's really important to us. So close that gap, do what's important to you, and that way you'll have less guilt and more efficiency when you're working, rather than worrying about not spending time with your loved ones while you should be focused on them.
Thank you, Doctor. This was very, very helpful. And with this, we'll end the rapid fire. We have about a few minutes left, having experienced yoga and meditation myself, and I also find this extremely powerful to get balance and resilience, and I've also experienced some of your meditations on the CureFit app. I think we do have time, and we can end this podcast with a powerful 2 to 3 minute meditation that will also help our listeners get focused and also to get balance. So over to you, Doctor, for a 2 to 3 minute meditation.
Sure, Nikita, thank you. It's been a pleasure doing this podcast, and I'm saying my concluding remarks now because after the meditation, it's usually best just to stay with stillness for a while. So it's been a pleasure, sharing my thoughts. And again, I just want to reiterate that if you're suffering any symptoms, any feelings of emotional distress, and it's not getting better despite your best efforts, do not hesitate to seek professional help, because all of this is curable and treatable. So let's practice now meditation, which is one of the most powerful habits we can start to maintain our mental health. Such an ancient practice, but it's even more relevant today during times of uncertainty. What we're going to do is really cultivate the art of noticing what is happening in the present moment without judging anything, without resisting anything, without trying to change anything. So I want you to just get into that zone, that attitude that I'm not going to try to do anything really. I'm not trying to change anything. I'm not trying to be relaxed. I'm not come here with any agenda. I'm just going to do this exercise for the next couple of minutes and bring my full attention to this exercise. And then just see what that experience is like. So making that intention, allow yourself to be seated comfortably. So your back is straight but not rigid. You're not slouching, but you're not rigid either. Your feet are making contact with the floor. Your hands are in your lap. Palms upwards. And your chin slightly down as if you're reading a book. And take a few deep breaths. Breathe in through your nose. And breathe out gently through your mouth. Your mouth slightly open, relaxed. Breathing in through your nose and out through your mouth, experiencing the sensations of the breath. Now letting your breathing return to its natural rhythms, breathing through your nose again, gently close your eyes, taking your time, bringing your attention to this moment. Just allow all the air to leave you, all the air leaving you without you trying, just letting it escape you. Now allow your breath to return to its natural rhythms. Just take a few moments to experience the sensations of your body on the chair. Noticing the contact of your body on the chair, feet on the floor, weight of your hands in your lap, and any other sensations. If your mind goes elsewhere, just bring it back gently to this moment. Noticing now how your body is moving with each breath. Don't try to breathe. You don't have to start the breath, hold on to the breath. Don't do anything. Just let your body breathe in and out. Just notice and experience the movements of your body with each breath, at each moment. And notice that as the body breathes in, your abdomen rises, goes outwards slightly. And as the body breathes out, the abdomen relaxes. So notice the sensations of your body moving with each breath. That's all you have to do. Just experience that. Whatever the breath is like, just letting it be. Experiencing. Enjoying the gentle rhythms of your breath. Moving your attention to the contact between your body and the chair. Noticing the contact of air on your skin. Notice any light shining through your eyelids. And slowly and gently open your eyes. Just notice how you're feeling. How your body feels, how your breath feels, how your mind feels. Then you can stretch and take a deep breath. Hopefully you feel a bit more relaxed. But whatever you experience, remember that meditation is a practice. And sometimes you may just notice that your mind is restless initially. Keep practicing this, keep bringing your attention, moving it to the breath, watching it, and your mind will become more and more under your control so that you can bring your mind to the present moment anytime you wish. And in this present moment, there's always happiness, always peace. So I wish you all the very best. It's been a pleasure. Take care.
Thanks, Doctor, for this powerful meditation and also for chatting with us. It was an honor to have you on our show. I'm sure our listeners would have found this extremely useful. I would also request our listeners to take a pledge to end mental illness stigma. If you have any ideas or suggestions on what NHRD could do in this regard, please share with us. With this, we wrap up this episode of Happy Hours. We promise to have more episodes on this topic in near future. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Wondering what's the buzz? Then tune into Happy Hours for your dose of All That Matters, the exclusive HR podcast by NHRDN in partnership with Timber Media, podcaster for India Inc.